Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. I'm Kavit Tafai. Political activists labeled as terrorists, falsely identifying domestic terrorism threats. Nothing wrong with going after the bad guy or threats, but to manufacture this based on scant data? That's what the FBI is accused of, blurring the lines between reality and speculation, as revealed through their domestic terrorism training materials, which has a special focus on activists. In this edition of the News Analysis, we will look closer at how freedom is not what it used to be in the U.S. Our analysis will also include ways the U.S. security apparatus goes about scrutinizing different people and groups as being terrorist threats, including their activities and movements.
The news is getting tighter. Domestic terrorism training materials of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation show how the organization is portraying a false image of political and non-political activists, describing them as terrorists. Here are the most significant of such so-called domestic terrorist threats: environmentalists, animal rights activists, black nationalists, and anarchists. Misrepresentation of these groups is what the FBI training material is all about. Now let's have a glance at some of the facts about these groups as written in the FBI material. Animal rights groups and environmentalists use economic sabotage, engage in direct action instead of legal social protests, and frequently target the logging industry. The anarchists are described as criminals who seek an ideology to justify their activities, are generally unorganized, reactive, and distrust or resent authorities. But who is a real anarchist, according to the FBI? It says its agents have recently foiled anarchist activities in two cases, one on April the 30th when five Occupy protesters were arrested during May Day protests, and the second one on May the 16th when three anti-NATO protesters were arrested in Chicago. The black separatists are also a target, but who are they? The American Civil Liberties Union says even on the FBI's comprehensive list of terrorist attacks that go back to 1980, no black separatist terrorist incidents are recorded. But that's not all. The FBI continues to manufacture terrorism threats. American Islamic extremists is another classification of terrorists in the U.S. The ACLU says the U.S. National Security Organization collected intelligence on Muslims inside mosques as well as outside them well before worshippers arrived to practice the religion. Critics of the FBI's domestic terrorist threats complain of a haphazard way of classifying terrorist groups. They say nonviolent civil disobedience of civil rights groups sit right next to tactics of militia extremists and white supremacists who have murdered, lynched, bombed, and assaulted government officials. One may ask why the government is classifying all these groups under the catch-all term terrorists. Well, the critics say the answer is clear. The FBI is falsely creating domestic terrorism threats by directly training agents to believe that they exist. The reason? Some argue that the FBI's policy seeks to stifle dissent against the backdrop of the growing grassroots Occupy movement.
Let's talk about this with our guests. Let me introduce them. An anti-war activist, Don DeBar, joins us from New York. From the Georgia Green Party, we have Bruce Dixon, who joins us from Atlanta. And former Pentagon official Michael Maloof joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me start first with you, Don DeBar. Everything terrorism, now we're looking at this domestic terrorism from the U.S. government's so-called war on terror, which started with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And of course, from what we covered in that report, it seems like the war has now reached the streets of New York and Washington against American people, against American activists. Has the White House declared war against American activists and its people, all branding this under the category of terrorism?
Well, they've actually just continued a war that's been taking place for at least 100 years, and certainly by the FBI since its inception. When J. Edgar Hoover became the director of the FBI, some 45, 50 years before the end of his career, one of the first people that he attacked was Marcus Garvey, and the black nationalist, quote-unquote, of his time. The entire idea of having a threat from subversives enabled the creation of the FBI. The United States political culture at that time looked at a national police force as something that was anathema to the political structure. Hoover used first the ideas of Reds and black nationalists and other scary people to enable the FBI. And then when people began to identify with some of the positions of, for example, the Communist Party in the early 1930s because of the economic conditions, he changed the enemy to the rum runners and the gangsters who were doing bank robberies and shoot-em-ups. And they used it in the entire process, large public relations campaign, to enable a national police force, which since then has been conducting war against dissent in this country. You only need to look at the Pentagon Papers, the COINTELPRO Papers by Ward Churchill and Jim Vanderwall, and an entire chunk of that history is well documented. And also to look at legislation that was introduced by Cynthia McKinney that sought to pry open just a couple of areas of that stuff and the resistance to that. Finally, just yesterday here in New York State, in the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York State, in the system in New York State, there was a decision that was made denying a historian who had made a request to look into complaints of allegations that people who were teachers or in the education system in New York City were communists. She wanted to look at these allegations and learn the identity of the people who made them. And even now, 50-some-odd years later, the courts have said that since those people were snitches, essentially, depending on anonymity, that their anonymity even today should be protected from the scrutiny of historians.
Bruce Dixon, when we look at how this is being approached by the security apparatus, we can mention the FBI. Isn't there something wrong? I mean, in terms of breaking the law, okay, there's law and there's people who are breaking it. But when they start molding this under different categories, I'm looking at black separatists or black nationalists or anarchists, or you have green anarchists. But in particular, going after, for example, people of color or Muslims, then that becomes a whole different story, doesn't it? Because they're trying to mold these people based on their ethnicity, based on their race.
There are so many things wrong with this, so many stinky, awful things wrong with this, that it's hard to know where to start. One place to start is that when 9/11 happened, George W. Bush was president. George W. Bush was the first MBA president. An MBA, for your viewers who don't know it, is a Master's of Business Administration. It's an advanced degree you get in colleges and universities here that qualifies you to become a businessman. And what has happened in the wake of 9/11 is we have made policing and certain aspects of policing businesses. The Department of Homeland Security, as our Pentagon, former Pentagon official, I'm sure will confirm, is mostly not has an enormous budget, but it's mostly not government officials. It's mostly not government employees. They are mostly private contractors of different kinds and private companies with contractual relationships to the government. I'll bet you anything that this study that the FBI is using and these series of studies were drawn up by private contractors who are doing this stuff to drum up business, because after all, that's what you learn in business school. You learn to anticipate what the government is doing and to get out in front of it by putting yourself and your company in a position to give them what they want. So if the government is going to ramp up policing, you've got to have your company there to manufacture reams of information on how to police and who to police and who threats are. So manufacturing these threats has not just become a practice of bad police work, it's become good business for a lot of American businesses. And that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing a business model applied to security, so that it's a growth industry, and look out, you might be the next threat.
Michael Maloof, tell us what is wrong with that, this whole idea and notion of manufacturing threat, whether it's manufacturing terrorism threats or misrepresenting along the process different groups such as political activists. I mean, the first question that comes to mind is, well, innocent people are going to be wrongly accused.
Well, you're absolutely right. Thanks for having me on. I think that this really represents
and what's Michael Maloof about that, but that doesn't.
I'm sorry, Bruce Dixon, Michael Maloof.
Xenophobia. I think what we have here is a new level of xenophobia that exists on the one hand, in which the exercise of freedom of expression is now being labeled as terrorism. This is something where you have the FBI and others now trying to create boogeymen, probably to justify further budgetary increases, to justify their work against demonstrators, people who are exercising their free rights. For that matter, by my coming on board here today, talking about and criticizing this, I guess we could be labeled as terrorists as well. This is really a pathetic development that has occurred, and I think that what the real problem is in the United States is that anyone who disagrees with the given view from the administration at this point is going to be labeled as a potential terrorist, or anyone who wants to demonstrate their and exercise their rights. We still have First Amendment rights, and I haven't heard that they have been abrogated or suspended as yet, but it appears as though this is leading in that very scary direction where we may be seeing some limitations imposed on our rights of freedom of expression. And the agents themselves are trained and given the materials to identify anybody that disagrees or expresses themselves adversely as a potential terrorist. And this is absolutely wrong. And the real terrorists are those that they have picked up in some cases, such as your white supremacists who have actually been caught trying to blow up government buildings. People who are out demonstrating, expressing their freedom of expression, are not the ones that really should be regarded as terrorists as such. And but there have been instances in the United States where lone wolves and small groups of militias, for that matter, have indeed come under the watchful eye, and thankfully they've been caught, and they're now in jail as a result. But to do this to people who want to exercise their freedom of expression, it's like creating a boogeyman in order to justify their own existence. And this is absolutely wrong. It really reeks of McCarthyism back in the 50s. And unfortunately, I think the economic situation in the United States is helping to foster this attitude, because people are becoming much more vocal. And as a consequence, the government probably feels that things are quickly getting out of hand, and it's almost tantamount to wanting to justify creating basically a pseudo-police state in order to contain it.
A pseudo-police state, Michael Maloof is stating there, Don DeBar, freedom of expression, as he said, equating to terrorism. It's almost incredible to talk about the United States in this framework. Has the Occupy movements, Don DeBar, have anything to do with this as a means for the governments to try to control and maintain this? I mean, what has happened?
Well, you know, with respect to the Occupy movement, there have been, aside from the secret police types of machinations that we're discussing, COINTELPRO-style tactics, and there's an awful lot of that. It's come out that the local police agencies around the country were being coordinated by the national government and by Homeland Security, whatever, the national apparatus, to conduct an all-out assault, basically, on the occupation, various occupations around the country and the Occupy movement. But this is not a new development. This is only a new manifestation of something that's been well-developed for a very long time. In the United States, there was organized state terror in the South, for example, against freedmen, so-called, people of African descent who were freed from slavery and who had begun to develop a public life in the South and a body politic. And when that was taken away, there was an organized terror campaign which involved the police, which involved the state apparatus, which involved the national government even. And it drove people into such a horrible state of repair that they ended up in a structure that became known as Jim Crow for almost another 100 years. And so that's one small glimpse at the type of behavior that's been exhibited here. We have the entire organized assault by the FBI and the CIA that was revealed in the church hearings against the Black Panther Party, against the anti-war movement, even against the Democratic presidential candidate by the Nixon White House, And these things have not only been replicated by everyone since then, but amplified and expanded to the point where now you have the President of the United States signing into law the very things that were proscribed before the church hearings, sworn would never happen again after the church hearings, and President Obama signs after a compliant Congress passes laws that would allow on the books a declaration that someone is an enemy of the state and having them be held indefinitely or even killed by fiat by order of the United States executive branch. Now, this is not something that just sprang up in reaction to the Occupy movement, but this is the product of the evolution of the American state over its lifetime. Born in genocide, built by slavery, nourished by Jim Crow and union busting and war. And so the fact that it is now run out of enemies because it's either vanquished or came to a draw with its enemies around the world and is turning inside on itself, it's inevitable that this would happen. People have been saying that must happen since Karl Marx wrote about these things, since Lenin spoke about them, since a million other people spoke about these things. Capital requires more and more intensive exploitation of labor. In order to do that, you're going to come up against deeper and deeper resistance, and so you need a stronger and stronger state apparatus, both in terms of external policy and internal policy, in order to sustain it, even when it becomes unsustainable.
But the extreme that the U.S. is pursuing this is quite incredible. Bruce Dixon, Don DeBar talks about an all-out assault. He used the word assault on a number of occasions there. There was another assault that surfaced in the news, and that was about the training material that was used in a course for U.S. military officers. I don't know if you recall that. And basically it said that America's enemy is Islam, that the U.S. might ultimately have to obliterate Islamic holy sites of Mecca and Medina, and that there's no regard in that respect for civilian deaths. Maybe an extreme example, but why is it that these types of teachings, in this case in point for military officers, is being exercised? Now, the course has been discontinued, I might add.
Yeah, once again, courses like this are typically developed by private industry, by private contractors on the government dime. It's a big business, and the government needs threats. The kind of government, the kind of elites who rule the United States need threats like a vampire needs blood. So they have to manufacture these threats, and manufacturing these threats, defining these threats, is a big business, and there's plenty of money to be made in it. So that's the genesis of this. And the only new thing about it, of course, is that it's a business. When 40 and 50 years ago, it wasn't a business. All this was done by government employees directly instead of private contractors. And as Don DeBar says, the particular definitions of the threats are different in this era. The oft-heard thing about obliterating holy sites in Muslim countries is a staple thing that you hear a certain kind of right-wing politician in the United States utter from time to time. And it's not surprising at all that something like that should become part of the training material that they subject military officers to in this country. What Mr. DeBar says is true enough, that we've got basically a racist and xenophobic kind of culture, and if you're a contractor of that, then that's what your customers want, and that's where you are, that's what you're going to provide them. So it's up to the American people to make their own voices heard and to find ways to work and struggle against these tendencies in our midst that are trying to shut our free expression down, trying to shut our ability to communicate with each other down, trying to shut our ability to make our voices heard outside the prescribed dance steps of the electoral processes to make ourselves heard. It's up to us to find new ways to make ourselves heard, and that's what the Occupy movement was about, and that's and who knows what the next step in that's going to be.
Michael Maloof, is it too far-fetched to make a comparison, the idea, the topic, manufactured threat, being parallel to this controversial use of informants by the FBI, where informants are given money in order for them to, basically, many are calling this entrapment of bringing in people based on that scenario. Can a parallel be drawn? Because at this point, the United States is using that operatives, and it involves other countries. Is there a parallel there?
Yeah, I think there is a parallel, and unfortunately, if you pay someone to say something, they're gonna bring you the worst case scenario or attempt to manufacture something that really doesn't exist in order to keep these guys in business. I think, but the government, the fact that that they're using First Amendment rights and labeling it under terrorism is a very, very serious development, and I think it portends something not too far in the future that people in the United States are going to have to be worried about, and that is that the administration basically has made a decision that they're going to start clamping down on peaceful demonstrations, knowing that the economy isn't going to be getting any better, that people are going to be out on the streets, they're not getting the jobs that they want, and I think that by just blanketing any dissension as terrorists is then helps the enforcers to develop this mindset that these are the bad guys, we're the good guys, and then they're going to go after any kind of dissent that that does begin to emerge in a peaceful way that expresses dissent, which they're entitled to under the First Amendment. I have not seen yet where the First Amendment has been suspended, but by the actions of the administration and by doing this kind of thing and by developing materials that will label peaceful demonstrators as terrorists, I think it is setting that mindset that is going to be potentially dangerous. Now, as you pointed out, the materials, the defense materials, Defense Department materials that were developed to basically call for the bombing of the holy cities was retracted, and with an expression of outrage actually from the defense secretary to his credit. But it does represent a mindset that does exist in the United States government.
Right.
And only the fact that people probably like the Saudis complaining did they even take any action.
And let me final question to you, Don DeBar, quickly if you can. First Amendment being jeopardized and Michael Maloof too far in the future. Isn't it now that this has happened? Hasn't the First Amendment been already jeopardized?
I would say that the First Amendment has been legislated out of existence by both the Bush administration, or under the Bush administration, and the Obama administration. And the level of arrogance is so great that even in the face of a court order, as took place last week in the Southern District of New York, where in the Christopher Hedges case, the NDAA was supposed to be enjoined from being applied to Americans, the government came back and filed a brief last week saying, in our opinion, the judge does not have the power to enjoin us from applying this to anyone but the people involved in this case alone. And so even though the court said that this violation of human rights is illegal, we believe, and this is what Obama administration argued in court with Preet Bharara presenting the papers, we believe that instead we can do it to anyone else who hasn't sued yet. That's how arrogant they are.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Anti-war activist Don DeBar from New York. Thank you. From Georgia, the Green Party, Bruce Dixon from Atlanta, Georgia, and former Pentagon official Michael Maloof from Washington. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Taghbay from the entire team here in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.